Three, two, one. We're on air.
Yeah, so welcome everybody to the Threatside podcast, where we review what has been going on in the crypto security space over the past month. Today we're looking at November. So it was a very interesting month. A ton of things happened, and we're here to document it and talk about it. And yeah, and cover all the news.
Yeah, and let's start with the first one, you know, the Unibot exploit. I don't know what to think about it, because in crypto space, if your hack is like under a million, it's like nothing, right?
Yeah, for sure. We are talking about the Unibot exploit, which actually happened by the end of October, which was October 31st. However, it did stretch to November. So, of course, you know, we want to review all the hacks which occurred in November, and Unibot was one of those. So Unibot, you know, it's essentially a bot which operates on Telegram. Its purpose is for sniping trades on Uniswap. You know, it says it in the name. Yeah, it's very unfortunate what happened. It's also kind of cliche, I guess, to see that a sniping bot got wrecked. You know, a little bit ironic, but
bot got sniped.
Yeah, literally. by a few black hats, or just one at least. But yeah, so it was a total of 560,000. It was in multiple meme coins. You know, and those meme coins were mainly Joe, Unibot, and Bcat. So it was a very interesting hack that took place. It was actually relating to a very popular token approval exploit. You know, we tend to see those a lot on SoloDit and just audit contests. I would say they've probably cut down a little bit now. What do you think, though? You don't tend to see it that much anymore, but it does still occur.
Yeah, like I did an audit like half a year ago, and it was the last time that I saw it. I guess that the Unibot was not really audited, or was audited by Certik. I think that 90% or like 99% of auditors find this kind of bug. So yeah, that's really bad for the bot.
This is something that bots also pick up quite frequently, you know, because it's something that's very easily detectable by a bot, which just, you know, scans in the form of regex, for instance. Some bots are very advanced, so they can pick up on something like this very easily.
Think that, like, I'm not sure, but I would check if Slytherin doesn't have any kind of detectors for that, because I know that they are, extending the Slyther with some new stuff, really interesting. I think that Slyther was either on AST, Abstract Syntax Tree, or it uses Abstract Syntax Tree to build some different structure, and then it uses that, or it works on bytecode directly. Oh, too much tools.
Sure.
I'm not sure which of them it's using, but definitely, like, if someone approves the smart contracts and you allow everyone to get the approved coins, it's really kind of basic
vulnerability. 100%. In spite of all of this, Unibot was actually, you know, relatively quickly in order to confirm the hack on Twitter and whatnot. And they did state it was a token approval exploit from their new router, and as a result, they did pause the router to stop the issue from becoming worse. So that was pretty nice to see. Scope Scan was actually the first one to detect it on Twitter, and they gave their advice as well, and just ultimately advised to revoke approvals for the router contract, and that's exactly what Unibot did. But you know, again, this entire situation did cause a 42.7% drop in price. Within the first hour, where the price actually went from $57.56 to $32.94. And it was doing quite good lately as well. You know, it went to $67 as well at some point. But, you know, it literally halved and it continued dropping, which was quite sad.
So, right now it's higher than it was before the hack. So,
I guess,
you know, it became some kind of celebrity due to this hack.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I guess when the protocol gets hacked as well, same with like Unibots or just like bots in general on Telegram, it gives a lot of attention to them, right? And if they can bounce back, then, you know, sometimes it's actually a thing that's good rather than bad, right? It's kind of like where projects have a good response to security rather than those which do not address anything and just kind of try to hide it. it really shows a lot about the project's character overall, right? So, you know, Unibot is kind of a good example of this because they decided to compensate the users who actually lost funds to the contract exploit. So that was actually very nice to see because you don't tend to see compensation occur quite frequently, whether it's bots or projects or anything of such like.
Yeah, like you hear about projects deciding to compensate, but really, you know, those who are actually compensating users are not that many.
Yeah, for sure. Now, the sad thing is, the hacker who, you know, hacked the Unibot contract, they were laundering the stolen ETH. Obviously, the meme coins which were hacked were converted into ETH first, and then that ETH was laundered via Tornado. It's kind of unfortunate that happens. You know, Tornado gets a lot of hate for what it is because it's always, you know, assisted in hacks and whatnot. So Tornado's reputation is very easy tarnished, right? And its main purpose is to provide privacy. Throughout this episode, everybody will actually see that Tornado is quite a frequent occurrence. Again, as sad as it is. But yeah, it's very prevalent in being utilized for stolen money. So it's actually a very big negative.
Yeah, so the thing with Tornado Cash, it's some people are calling it money laundering as a service because I guess that most of the trading that is happening right now is just, you know, people trying to launder their monies there because, like, of course, officially you are not supposed to really use it. And Tornado Cash right now is like taking each time heavy beating. But the thing is that normal users that, you know, want to do everything according to the law are not using Tornado Cash because, it's on the blacklist. So, like, right now, you know, saying that it's bad, it's like, you know, the argument that you have gone, that it's illegal, you know, and you are using it and, you know, the gun is, you know, killing people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is, but it's illegal. So, you know, I guess that people that don't care about being legal are also, you know, not the ones that are, you know, doing other legal stuff.
Yeah, I agree. To be honest, the whole Tornado situation kind of causes privacy concerns. You know, at the end of the day, privacy is a human right, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like if Tornado is a prime example of, you know, having a very good privacy service, but it's always being tarnished. The main argument against Tornado is, of course, how it's used for money laundering, for drug cartel money, for instance. It's like, it's very easy to, you know, create those arguments, but you always have to pair them up with a defense as well to kind of balance it out, right? It's a really one-sided argument. It's kind of like saying how cryptocurrency is always used for crime, right? Because it's just all digital, you know, it's very easy to hide your identity and whatnot. It's like, you know, you can't actually always say that. You do have to respect for the privacy it provides overall. You know, it's not always a case of where it's being used for crimes, right? You really have to see two sides of the same story. It's kind of like a knife, right? You use a knife to chop vegetables and make food, but it's like, yeah, you could also use it to kill somebody, but you can't focus on a knife and be like, oh yeah, we need to ban knives because they kill people. Like, you know, you still have a general utility for them, right? So I feel like that's very relative to the whole privacy concerns of crypto. And specifically services like Tornado.
100%. And I'm not really sure, you know, if that many people are using it for any, like, criminal activity. Because it's, like, super hard to, you know, withdraw it right now. It's not that easy as you think. Especially if you, want to launder a million. Like, if you are looking at all the addresses that performed some hacks, the money is still on chain. At least, you know, from the hacks that we know, you know, and we are able to trace them, the money is still on chain. Like,
yeah.
So it's not that easy to move it. And recently, I don't know why, but, you know, I just have a feeling that Lazarus Group at least stopped their activity in crypto because of this very problem, like how to get money out of the.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Overall, Tornado, I mean, yeah, I believe our arguments are very, you know, plausible. They're very accurate. And at the end of the day, you know, even if it's like a group such as Lazarus Group, which utilizes a privacy service, I feel like the government and higher power, so to speak, can always leverage that, right, to remove the privacy services and just use the bad sides and kind of, you know, leverage people against the service. Which is a bit unfortunate. It's kind of how you see governance takeovers on projects, for instance. I guess you could apply the same concept here, just in a bit of a different notion. But yeah, it's very sad to see that privacy services get crushed so easily. And, you know, there's not much attention given to their overall benefits.
Yeah. But, you know, I just one thing that came to my mind, it's really easy to have from one side privacy. Like maybe it's not easy, but it's doable. You have privacy, and from your other hand, make sure that, you know, the money is legal.
Yeah.
Just use ZK, right?
Yeah, for sure. I definitely agree with that.
So no one knows, you know, how much money you spend on something, but you can prove that it's legal.
Yeah, I agree. I guess another downside to using a privacy service like Tornado, let's say you're a legitimate user, and, you know, a lot of criminals utilize the protocol as well. Essentially, you own tainted money. But the question is it really tainted? You can apply the same concept to cash, like physical cash, you know, in the world. What's the chance of you having dirty money? I mean, maybe high, you know, considering that money could be given to a bank, it could be given to just a normal shop, and then the shop returns you the money. It's very easy to kind of, you know, transact this dirty money, so to speak. But it's literally no different than, you know, being on digital. So it's like, again, arguments against dirty money for a service like Tornado or anything of such like, it doesn't really work out, because it's, you know, the same problem exists in the physical world. And it's like, if you're making that argument against Tornado, you also have to make that argument against physical cash, which, I mean, ultimately rules it illogical if you're arguing against a service like Tornado. But yeah.
And actually, to this point, I remember when the Tornado Cash was banned, people were sending the celebrities, just a vast amount of money that was first going through the Tornado Cash, because they will be banned as well. So yeah, this was crazy.
Indeed. But that's enough talk for the Tornado conversation, and as well for the Unibot topic. We are now moving onwards to the MEV bot on Ethereum, which actually got wrecked recently for $2 million through an unprotected swap function. So I guess you could say that the MEV bot, you know, they got a taste of their own medicine, right? it's pretty crazy, I'm not gonna lie. Hackers getting hacked, basically. But yeah, so they were wrecked for $2 million, unprotected swap function. It was relating to the sale of wrapped Ether for wrapped BTC. And, you know, a wild black hat found their unprotected function and simply took advantage of it. And they drained the arbitrage bot contract.
Yeah, again, like, security by obscurity doesn't work.
Indeed.
Yeah, even if you do everything to hide, because I guess that this MEV bot, you know, had some additional security measures.
It was actually quite stunning to see that, you know, because a lot of the creators of MEV bots today, they're quite intelligent, and, you know, and they know how to protect a bot. So whether, you know, this was a fresh MEV bot maker or not, I mean, you know, there was $2 million at stake, so I'd probably say it wasn't really a fresh bot maker. But granted, if it was, it was a very simple protect that could have been in place, and, you know, it cost a lot as a consequence. So, yeah.
Like, I'm just wondering if the people researching over this MEV bot was like black boxing and, you know, throwing everything into it, just try to decompile it and then reason about the code.
Yeah, yeah.
Really, you know, love to hear, you know, from the guy that hacked it. You know how he came up with this idea.
Maybe we'll have him on the Fretside podcast one day. See how to think like a true black hat. But yeah, funnily enough as well, Tornado was also used in this instance to launder all the money. So again, it's very sad to see Tornado being utilized for that purpose. But, you know, with what I said earlier, if you want true privacy, this is kind of what you have to allow. It's really how it works, you know. You can't attach any strings to privacy, otherwise it's not true privacy, right? So it's really sad that this is the sort of trade-off that we would have to make to have a really good privacy service in place, whether this is web 2 or web 3, you know, the same notion applies.
Yes, indeed. Man, like, this is crazy what happened last month. But actually, like, each month is the same. Like, not the same, exactly. But the hacks are, like, totally crazy. Yeah, well, the thing is that we are seeing over and over the same kind of hacks. It's, like, very hard to have something really unique. And the next story, which is Onyx hack, is just one of these stories. Onyx, like, recently, which is fork of Compound Finance, end up losing like 1100 ETH around, so it was equivalent of $2 million, due to well-known Compound pool empty pool attack. And oh my god, I did a hack analysis video on that where I delve into details of this hack. But this kind of attack, this empty pool attack on Compound, is like super well known. We already had like two other hacks. One was like 100 Finance and one was Midas Capital. And actually this specific hack was, I guess, copy paste of the attack on 100 Finance. It looked totally the same.
Yeah. Honestly, it's a very common hack, to be honest. Even when I order on contest these days, I do tend to see that this, you know, empty pool attack does occur quite frequently. I did find one on one project, but I messed up the POC, so it was completely invalidated, sadly. But it was a valid bug, actually, and it's quite crazy to see how common it is. But, you know, the rounding error is a very big problem within it, right? And from a development side of things, it's very easy to miss it, especially if you're not so technical and whether you're not so security focused, right? It's again something that's very easy missed. But I guess that's why we're here, you know, to protect protocols against this sort of thing.
And actually, like, this is modified version of ERC 4626 vault attack, when you either have empty pool or you are able to empty the pool. And this is like Compound actually is a precursor of 4626 because it has like similar characteristics. You have like C tokens that you get back from the actual token, and you are just getting your shares of the whole pool.
Exactly.
But the actual problem here was with new deployed Pepe pool. So the Onyx protocol deployed new pool, and for a few days it had no liquidity. And the problem with Compound is that in Compound V2, every pool is connected. So if you are able to manipulate price in one of the pools, you can drain all the pools. This is really problematic. And I guess that Compound V3 solved that problem by having isolated pools. And I know that Venus protocol on BSC also had isolated pools because of that. Yeah, but definitely this is... The attack is so well known that, you know, it's a shame that neither the project nor, you know, the audit company that did audit for them did not find it.
I agree. What's even worse as well is, you know, Onyx, it was a total removal of, you know, 1,164 ETH for Onyx's TVL. But then because of the overall hack happened, you know, it put a very big dent in their reputation. So the users of the community actually ended up withdrawing an extra 250 ETH. So the total loss for Onyx is actually 1,414 ETH. And that's no light amount, to be honest, especially for a project that's fairly big, you know. So it is very unfortunate that happened.
This is how this space looks like right now.
Yeah, I agree. What's even worse is that this will get even worse in the bull run. You know, projects will be coming on Code Arena, Sherlock, you know, Immunify, Hats, for instance, Cantina, you know, many other platforms. But the Black Hats will be targeting those projects, you know, like altcoin projects, you know, very like shitcoin projects. I really don't like that word, but it's very relevant. You know, very, very startup projects, right? They're all going to be potentially hacked. And I would probably assume that security is going to be very undermined from the new people who enter the space and want to deploy their projects. So it's very sad. And we don't actually know how many black hats are in the crypto space. I would say 2023 and 2024 is going to be a very interesting statistic for cryptocurrency hacks. 2024, in my opinion, will probably see the biggest rise in hacks as well, because so many people, you know, learn how to audit I would probably say that, you know, a certain percentage of them did turn Black Hat. It's something that you tend to see in Web 2 as well. Even, you know, red teamers or pen testers overall who have legal jobs, you know, in the nighttime, they actually just, you know, they're actual Black Hat hackers on forums. So it's quite interesting how it all plays out.
Yeah, and like, just wait until the Web 2 Black Hats move to Web 3.
Oh yeah, that's going to be even more insane. I'm not gonna lie, because it's not even a step up from their point of view. It's a step down, in my opinion. You know, if a Web 2 person with knowledge on buffer overflows, heap overflows, etc., you know, comes into Web 3, the majority of exploits aren't really that complicated compared to the Web 2 exploits. You know, so it's not really a step up. It is really a step down. And it's quite dangerous, to be honest.
Yeah, and like pawning.eth, he actually comes from Web 2. And as you said, you know, the buffer overflow and all these low-level vulnerabilities, you know, this, he like leaves and breathes it, and he just does the Web3 as a part-time. Mm-hmm. And he was asked about why there are, you know, not so many people moving from Web2 security to Web3 security. And what he said, like, really was so funny, it blew my mind. And he was just saying that adults do not beat children.
Oh yeah, that's very true. I'm not gonna lie, that's very, very true.
Yeah, so
it's also why you tend to see the Black Hat hackers on forums. They tend to be quite young. You know, the percentage of those Black Hat hackers on forums who are like 30 plus, for instance, is very low compared to all the other Black Hat hackers who are just teenagers, quite literally. You know, they're literally as young as 12, 13. You know, the doxing scenes in Web 2, they're very big. And years ago, this was a massive problem as well. There used to be doxing communities on Skype. These people were actual hackers as well. Doxing, obviously, I don't really want to call it hacking because it's not, but they were in the same fields either way. The doxing side was just kind of like a extension to it. But it's still quite crazy how age really is a big difference when it comes to hacking. It's
unfortunately,
insane.
Unfortunately, I'm too old.
But yeah, in other words, we have Raft Finance hack as well. This happened on the November 11th this year, 2023. This was a very big hack, I'm not going to lie. It was 6.7 million, and it was relating to the unbacked R tokens. So the attacker ultimately leveraged a flash loan from Aave, where they borrowed 6,000 CBETH and manipulated the interest rate position manager contract. This is something that I did see once on Coderina, I believe. I cannot recall the project, but the nature of this bug is very similar to what I do see quite often. Maybe not so often, but you know, it happens more so quite frequently, maybe, I guess you could say.
Yeah. I also did a hack analysis on it, and the actual root cause, like, there are two root causes, think, like, people are only saying about one of them, but there is, like, one of them is using the ERC20 balance off to check how much the protocol has money, and the index that tracks shares to amounts is calculated based on that. What an attacker did, you know, the old story, he just donated, sent directly to the smart contract, the ERC20. Mm. And during the liquidation, the index was recalculated and was really set to really high amount. Yeah, like, exchange rate was skewed by like factor of 1,000 or something like that. And the second issue was that there was rounding up, not down. The function that they were using to calculate amount of shares was, no matter what value you had and what index was, always one was added. So with, you know, the index was skewed, and attacker just, you know, took 1 cent, I guess, like one way amount of the token. And of course he should get zero shares, but because of this one addition and totally skewed index, he just like retrieved one share. And he did this 60 times, and this 60 way of the token, of the shares, allowed him to drain whole pool.
Yeah. Honestly, precision calculation is something that's very important to take into account when it comes to auditing. And it can just be so easily go unnoticed. It's quite scary, to be honest, for how severe it really is. And for instance, you know, Trailer Bits audited Ref Finance, as well as Has Finance, and that went unnoticed in those audits. So it really goes to show that even the best of the best firms, you know, sometimes can't see all of the bugs. And this actually is an argument that I actually used on Reach with some of the members. You know, they always kind of doubt themselves for not being able to find certain bugs. And I'm always like, you know, well, you know, if you find a bug that, let's say, Trailer Bits didn't find, or some other very reputable auditor, I mean, who's better in this instance? Is it you or is it them? Like, what do you actually factor in to conclude who's the best or who's good? You can't really, you know, pinpoint it. Ultimately, everybody brings someone else to the table, right? Everybody has a unique skill set, a unique perspective, and I think that's important. You know, so at the end of the day, nobody should doubt themselves. Anything can go, you know, unnoticed in an audit. There's a lot at stake, right? There's a lot of pressure on the auditor as well, because if you're doing a solo audit, for instance, and you do miss a bug, I mean, that's your reputation at stake. So, you know, the pressure can actually rise quite a lot when you're doing an audit, which is very unfortunate. But it really just goes to show that you shouldn't really doubt yourself, because anything can happen and security is not guaranteed. You know, that's really how it works in Web 2 and in Web 3.
Yeah, totally well said. But I was like thinking right now, what could we do to prevent that? And there is a tool called symbolic execution and symbolic test that you can use Halmos, for example, to prove, like, change all your variables into like mathematical symbols and prove the same as you have in your I think it's algebra, right? If you x and algebra. Y equals some value, and then you prove, you know, if this can be or cannot be, you know, in some range. So this is what symbolic execution is for. And I think that it would be able to catch such a bug. And actually, I think that in this particular case, even maybe some good fuzz test or invariant test would do the job.
Yeah, I agree. Invariant testing is very good as well. People need to know the true importance of it. It can honestly show you some really interesting stuff when it comes to testing contracts.
Yeah, but actually there's a catch. I know that 100Proof was talking about that if the chance of a bug is small enough, like he said, I believe 1 in 1,000,000 or 1 in like some amount of millions, then you could really miss the bug, even with fuzz tests.
Yeah, I would not be surprised, to be honest. It does make sense.
Yeah, so still, I think that we as a space, and especially devs and security researchers, need to really start to use, you know, all the tools that we have, like symbolic execution, mutation testing, fuzz testing, invariant testing, formal verification. And yeah, I already said about it before. Like, you can write your formal test yourself. Like, just take a week or a month to learn it and damn, just write it yourself and run it through Certora Prover. You can like pay a few dollars a month, I guess. And yeah, just have their platform and run your tests on their prover.
I agree. Yeah. Tests are honestly very important. People undermine them just as much as invariant testing. But testing overall, it really goes to show, like, if you're participating in an audit on Code Arena or even, you know, a private audit, if a project has no test cases, I mean, that's a very big red flag, right? It goes to show as well what extent the project went to test the security themselves. And granted, you know, they're paying for a security audit or a public audit on Code Arena or anything. So, you know, maybe you shouldn't be expecting test cases. But it's just a good habit to form from, you know, a protocol's side of things and just be ultimately prepared, right? At the end of the day, nothing really hurts to do that. So.
Yeah, but... But I would add one thing here, devs usually like only test for happy path, and I would really love to see engagement of security researchers in writing of the test. At least, you know, the guy just said, hey, come on, guys, you have to test this, and that. And in this case, maybe it's worth, you know, to add some edge case for this. I remember as I was writing one of the smart contracts, I was like testing things like if the Open Zeppelin reentrancy flag really works. Yeah, it worked, but if it was a Viper code, it would not work. Yeah, but I was really paranoid about it. And there is like one, for example, because it was escrow contract. You could put ERC-20 and NFTs there. You can like then get it back.
Mm.
And there was this one edge case when I was sending ERC-20 and withdrawing it, and I was just doing some tests. What if I do it like 10 times? And withdraw it and then give it to another account and again? And I had some edge case, and I was like, it's not working, but why? I spent like, I think, 3 days on that to finally pinpoint that. Then I learned, you know, that if you are having struct inside mapping, the delete will not delete your struct. But, you know, if I was just testing it as I do normal Web2 stuff, then I would not find it like at all.
Yeah.
Because I would not even try to write, you know, such a complex test case.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, Web3 gets you thinking outside of the box in very interesting ways, I must say.
Yeah. Woo! And actually, we have some really well-known name next on the list, which is DYDX.
Yeah, that was quite a big hack as well.
Well, I don't know if it was hack. Like, it definitely was not hack, but...
Well,
was,
yeah.
This is crazy. This is normal price manipulation.
Yeah.
This is one of the, how it was called, by Mr. Eisenberg? How was he called?
Oh, I do remember something along those lines.
Yeah, the Mango exploiter, he also did a price manipulation, and he...
Yeah.
Then he called it, like, really profitable.
Yeah, yeah, and he basically said that it's, like, super legal and whatnot, but it's not.
Yeah,
it's,
but it's government, like, taking advantage. Proved him wrong.
Yeah, it was not an interesting thing to see. I saw it go down in real time on Twitter, actually. It was honestly insane. But his arguments as well, they were just, you know, ludicrous, I would say. Taking advantage on that sort of scale when, you know, normal people are just investing into the protocol and whatnot. I mean, you can't really expect nothing to, you know, come as a consequence from it. So, yeah, it's truly insane that he tried to pass it off as a feasible argument and something that can just be very profitable and just executed by anybody. But you're definitely right that it's not a hack. It's just more so of an attack, you know, taking advantage of code logic, maybe you could say. And, yeah, nevertheless, it is an interesting scenario that does occur from time to time.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, in the next bull run, we'll see way more of those.
For sure.
Yeah, the attack was really, it looked normal. We had this Wi-Fi token, which for whatever reason blew up, and the attacker was just opening new loans. He was increasing the open interest on DYDX for this token, and like the price was going up. And yeah, you know, it's like you are increasing the demand and decreasing supply, and the price go up. And then what he did, he just, you know, sell everything off. So it was like typical pump and dump.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and because of the liquidations that took place, it went down underwater, this Wi-Fi. And actually, DYDX had to pay $9 million out of their insurance fund.
I mean, to be honest, $200 million off its market cap. That's a very big hit, especially if you account for that from a investing side of thing, you know, when, you know, not even security people, just, you know, general traders who look at the token, you know, invest, do their overall due diligence. A $200 million, you know, removal off of market cap, that's that, you know, that kind of screams a big investment opportunity, but it also raises a ton of questions. And, you know, your interest in the project could just vanish. So something like this also damages reputation quite a lot, which is, again, sad to see. Especially when the projects care about the security and whatnot. The consequences unintentionally are quite big.
And in this case, what could be done? Like, I think that DYDX reacted, but after the fact, they just increased the margin requirements for that. So, definitely something that the protocols have to consider from now on. You should really make sure that the tokens that you're using in your protocol are not susceptible to the price manipulation attacks like this, and that they really have some deep liquidity.
Yeah, for sure. It could damage both of the parties' reputation. So, you know, there's a lot at stake, basically.
Yeah, like one token, which had 9 million losses, but your protocol loses like 200 million, right?
Mm. And then we also have the HTX and Hecko cross-chain hack. This was quite big as well in terms of its loss. 26 million. And it related to the Hecko chain bridge, which was compromised. So the attack actually included withdrawing stablecoins, and as well as ETH, SHIB, and LINK, and also many more. It did lead to a temporary suspension of withdrawals and deposits on the Hecko chain, which of course created quite a big disruption for the normal traders, which utilized the overall chain and the bridges and whatnot. Justin Sun, the founder of Tron, announced that HTX will fully compensate users for any losses which were incurred due to the hack. I guess that's a benefit. I did say earlier that, you know, compensation is something that we do not get to see often, but it's nice to see it in this instance as well. I guess that it seems to be a trend now that the compensation aspect from projects is increasing, which is good to see. I guess this increases transparency in the crypto space for the project's reputation, because, you know, if it was just a continuous line of just projects never compensating users, I would say that the general traders, investors and whatnot, there would be more against invested in crypto, maybe, perhaps. You know, some do not care simply, but for some, it goes a long way, right, to ensure that their investment is safe. So it does reflect on the crypto space either way, especially in such big amounts like 26 million.
Yeah, and there is the shady part of this incident, because this is actually the second exploit of the project related with Justin Sun. Poses some questions, like maybe he was targeted, or like, I'm not saying anything, but it, you know, doesn't sound good for, especially for Mr. Justin Sun.
I agree, yeah. It's definitely possible that he could be targeted, in my opinion. But again, that's just simple, you know, assumption. I guess we'll never know unless he directly says and provides proof, rather than just assertions or anything like that. Thankful for PegShield as well for alerting everybody on Twitter in regards to the actual transaction, which gave a lot of attention to it. I think that one transaction was valued at 19 million. 19 million in one transaction. Quite crazy, to be honest.
Yeah, and like, we still don't know what really happened. There are just people are suspecting that it was like private key leak.
Mm.
Another private key leak. Those are one of the biggest hacks again, but I don't know what need to really change. Like, when will the people learn how to really store their private keys, especially if you are, you know, having such big amounts of money on you.
I agree.
Yeah, things like hardware security modules. Having your cold wallet that has, you know, most of your funds, and have hot wallets that are having just, you know, like 5%, 10% or whatever amount you need, for running your business daily, and the separate physical network, for the computer that you are doing anything with your cold wallet. Like, those are the really basics, and I don't think that anyone like is teaching that to the teams, how to secure their cold wallets, and this is a shame. We should do something about it.
I agree. To be honest, in regards to the private key conversation, this is something that you do tend to see on Web 2 as well, specifically with API keys. Multiple times I actually saw on HackerOne leaked API keys, which can be leveraged, from just a normal user perspective or black hat perspective even, and it can have some severe consequences. So, you know, it's quite alarming to see that the same issue persists in Web3, you know, slightly in a different, you know, aspect, but it's still really the same problem. So hopefully we can see the future involving some sort of remedy to this. But time will tell, you know, time will tell.
Yeah, there is this old cliche that we are still young, you know, as a space.
It's quite common to see that.
Yeah. But I don't know if we are like, we were like really young, you know, like 10 years ago. But right now, I think that we should, you know, start to learn our lessons.
I agree. Just focus, just grind, and just ensure that security is at its max.
Yeah, definitely. And continuing, like, this is the most crazy story of this month. Definitely. Kyber hack.
Yeah, this one is truly insane. Not only for the hack, but also for I guess maybe the delusion from the hacker a little bit. is truly remarkable. But yeah, go into it though. It's absolutely crazy.
Yeah, so KyberSwap recently on November 22 lost 46 million on one hack, and it was so unusual that not many people really understand what happened. I did a video on that, but I don't know how much hours I spent just to try to understand what really happened. And after reading the other people's analysis, I still could not wrap my head around it. But this actually concerned how KyberSwap worked in relation to their concentrated liquidity pools. You have to know that in concentrated liquidity AMMs, the thing is that you have not the liquidity spread across the whole price range, but you can provide liquidity for specific price ranges. And the price ranges are really discretized into the small amounts called ticks. And each tick has their own liquidity. So for example, tick 100 may have like 1 million liquidity, but tick 200 may have just like $100,000 liquidity. And the thing is that each time that you are moving the price through other ticks, you have to update the liquidity that you have. And due to the small rounding issue, the attacker was able to land really close to the tick price and actually make two separate calculations. One thinking that it went through the tick, and second one think that it did not go through the tick. So when he did that, he actually moved one tick left, but the liquidity was not removed. And then he moved back and liquidity was added again. And actually what he did like infinite money glitch, because he was able to inflate the liquidity very much and thus drive the price down. Unfortunately for Kyber, get most of the liquidity.
It's probably one of the most complex hacks that's happened in the crypto space, isn't it?
Oh yeah, it is definitely one of the most. Actually, I'm not really sure if I saw anything as complex as this hack. I don't know. I can't recall anything like that.
It's more so spotting the detail in how the protocol works and just, kind of like taking advantage of it, but in a more harsh way. But yeah, in my opinion, it's probably something that's kind of in its own league, because again, I haven't seen anything like this either. So it was very interesting to see this. But in my opinion, what's even more interesting about this whole scenario, obviously you've got the hack, but then you've also got the actual hacker who basically tried to take the whole protocol as hostage. He was given a lot of sarcasm on Etherscan, just the Ethereum network, with his transactions. Obviously, if you don't know already, you can embed messages into transactions, for those who are just unaware of that fact. And the hacker was, he was saying some interesting things. He wanted to negotiate, but his terms were just purely crazy. At one point, I thought he was just simply trolling. Because those negotiation terms were so extreme, to me, it just came across as trolling. And it's like, yeah, Kyber would never get that money back. Again, he wanted to own like the whole protocol.
Let's just read it, because this is insane. The message is as goes. To all relevant and or interested parties, I thank you for attention and patience during this uncertain time of Kyber, as well as Kyber the company. Below I have, so what he did? The delineated the treaty for us to agree to. My demands are as follows. First, complete executive control over Kyber. And then, it goes on and on and on. Oh my God. Like, this is pure trolling.
Yeah, like he wanted like full authority and ownership over governance of Kyber. He wanted all the documents relating to Kyber, the whole structure, the operations, the revenues, the profits. And you demand these sort of terms, they're never going to be met. And because they're so extreme, it really does come across as a troll from the hacker's point of view. So, I don't know if that was his goal anyway, just to troll and just, kind of laugh at the whole situation. But yeah, those terms were certainly extreme. I do feel sorry for Kyber, to be honest. It was a very big loss. And they took security very importantly as well. Like, they put a lot of money into security. They were audited by 100 Proof as well. This must have been a hard time for 100 Proof as well, because he spent a lot of time on that as well. So, yeah, just to see the hacker just kind of invalidate everything was very unfortunate. Officer CIA actually did a text interview with him, and the hacker actually said that the most useful rules for learning Web3 security was the Solidit articles, and that's literally it. Like, that's the only one he referenced. So I'm assuming he just read a ton of Solidit, you know, reports that are posted on there, and you know, he kind of learned that way. I guess it is a very effective way to learn Web3 security for free as well.
Attention to all black hats. Use Solidit.
And then obviously YouTube as well, you know, there's a ton of resources on there, right? So it's not like at the end of the day you have to spend like $1,000 on Web3 security, because all the resources out there are free. YouTube, it has a lot of Web3 security content for free. So ultimately, you could, you know, even if you're fresh in Web3 security, you can just go on YouTube. You can also read Solidit articles, and you can learn quite a lot from that alone. Also engaging on Twitter, right? The hacker said that he had an alt account which follows Officer CIA. Like, he was very familiar with Officer. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe it could be someone who, you know, does Code Arena audits. We never know. I guess that's anonymity for the win. But yeah.
Yeah, like, I know that Officer CIA is, like, really well-known. Like, just look at the amount of followers he has. Like, I don't know about from maybe Madhid Gupta and Sam Sisi Son, anyone else that has, you know, as big audience as him. So I would not be, like, amazed if, you know, it turned out for him, you know, to do Code Arena or Sherlock. Or maybe, you know, placing one of the top places there.
Yeah, I agree. I'll say he would be in a very good position to do that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think that we should do some psychological matching, you know, and try to find out someone that could be in a good fit. Yeah, just joking. Yeah, let's move on.
Yeah.
Next one, Polynex hack. Like, I don't know if we really need to talk anything more about it. This is the same thing as we've HDX and Hecko. Just private keys were leaks, and actually this is again history that is connected to Mr. Justin Sun. So yeah, you know, looks like he was targeted by someone.
Yeah, it does seem to be like a target, you know. Two of those projects just hacked, and it's the same, you know, person, Justin Sun. It is very interesting. I mean, the losses as well were quite in total amount, and initially it was 60 million, but it just, you know, it stretched out. So that was really interesting to see, but very sad as well for the investors, you know, and the general traders and whatnot. 100 million, that's a very big pot.
Definitely. And next, similar story, Kronos hack, but this time it was due to the compromised API keys, like the thing that you just mentioned.
Yes. Yeah, compromised API keys. Honestly, again, like I said, you know, you tend to see this quite a lot in Web2 on bug bounty platforms like BugCrowd, HackerOne, the list goes on. But it is quite a common attack vector. Not surprised that it's in Web3. It's quite harsh what can be done with compromised API keys. You know, the Kronos, they had to suspend their trading completely on November 19th. And then we also had Zach XBT on Twitter, who's a very known individual in the crypto space. Zach actually does a lot of nice work. Massive kudos to him. But he uncovered the stolen funds to transferred to six distinct crypto wallets. So, yeah, I mean, to be honest, if Zach was on me, I would be cooked the next day. He would know everything about me. He is really good with his analysis, to be honest, especially with crypto. It's truly remarkable.
Yeah, you know, I think that we have many materials how to be a better security researcher, bug hunter and everything. However, we don't have enough resources to, you know, how to do the good OPSEC, how to do like open source intelligence. And yeah, we have just Zach XBT, but maybe if we had like 100 of Zach XBTs, we would be able to trace way more.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. I mean, what was kind of interesting about that is, you know, Arkham, right? Arkham Intel, they did like a very interesting thing, right? Which they implemented a feature where the public can basically dox wallets for a monetary reward. This actually kind of got a lot of heated attention on Twitter. A lot of people were, you know, kind of saying how it's a massive red flag for privacy, you know, and at the same time, they were like, oh, you know, you can't be doing this. What's the legal complications of this, right? Because if somebody gets doxxed, and if it involves, like, I don't know, suicide or somebody dies or something, you know, then Arkham can be held accountable for giving attention to something, and kind of creating that situation. But a lot of people then started to argue that, you know, it's kind of needed, right? That's obviously one negative side of it, but then there's also a massive positive where it teaches people to be truly private. And then also if any hacks occur, then again, that's a massive benefit to the project because they can, you know, just kind of put a monetary reward out there on Arkham Intel platform and maybe find the hacker, you know? So there's a very big positive and a very big negative to it.
Yeah, it's like doxing as a service.
yeah, quite literally. Yeah,
yeah, it reminded me of one episode of Black Mirror. I watched this like way back, but there was some case that the guy was not really doxing, but he did this game when people were choosing who to kill via the social media app.
Okay.
Yeah,
I think I remember it.
Yeah, it was not really doxing, but it just reminds me of that. And the people were voting on who to kill, and then, you know, the robots was really killing the people.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, so doxing people is just, yeah, I don't really know what to think about it. Of course, we do want to, like, dox the people that are doing bad things, the black hats, but if for whatever reason we are doxing normal people,
yeah, it's a big problem.
This can, you know, get out of the control really quickly.
It's a very gray line. That's quite literally what it is. On another topic as well, we have Tether. They froze $225 million worth of stolen USDT after a Department of Justice investigation. So, you know, the DOJ communicated with Tether quite closely. And it was self-custodied wallets, and they were related to an international human trafficking group in Southeast Asia. So there's quite a few documentaries that I watched on YouTube. You tend to see the human trafficking groups in Southeast Asia or just anywhere in Asia. It does tend to be a common trend, but this one was specifically involved in apparently a pig butchering romance scam. Quite an interesting name. I don't really know what to think of that name, but at that sort of value, and pairing that name to it, it sounds like something very weird. But it was the largest freeze of USDT to date. So, yeah, I mean, $225 million, that's an absolute crazy amount of money, especially from human trafficking. That's, you know, that can put you on the radar very quickly and very easily. But apparently the DOJ, I don't know why I keep mispronouncing it, but they were involved in collaboration with the cryptocurrency exchange OKX, you know, OKX. And they're a pretty popular exchange, I'm not going to lie. They, you know, you can do futures on them and just general trading. You know, they're definitely no small fish, let's just say. And yeah, and then, of course, we had the analysis from Chainalysis, which was very useful. They are actually very good. I remember when I was writing my dissertation and I was doing cryptocurrency forensics, I actually used Chainalysis as a source for their diagrams because their diagrams are very nice. Their analysis is very accurate as well. That overall system in place is very accurate. So yeah, massive kudos to Chainalysis, especially in situations like this, you know, when it comes to human trafficking, it's a very serious thing. And it's truly sad to see that it goes on this world. But yeah, so it was a very weird seizure, but I'm glad it happened. And I'm glad the group was ultimately taken down to obviously stop this from going on further.
On the other note, finally, all those meds and highs from Code Arena and Sherlock concerning blacklisting, you know, are true. Like, finally someone got blacklisted.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. I feel like that's kind of maybe a little problem as well, you know, especially if we correlate this to the tornado talk that we had earlier. You know, Tether could blacklist any sort of people who use Tornado Cash, who maybe, let's say, deposit Ether into Tornado Cash, get the Ether out, and then convert that same Ether into USDT. What if, you know, Tether just decided to freeze all of them? You know, that kind of creates a big privacy concern as well, especially given the fact that they are in responsible for like 70% of BTC inflow. You know, they are a very big player, and when it comes to privacy, I mean, something like this is a problem as well. You know, I guess it is centralized, and that's for the better ways, especially when you have cases like this of human trafficking. But again, it does raise big questions for privacy, which is alarming. But nevertheless, I'm still happy that human trafficking group got took down.
Definitely. But yeah. I'm just wondering here concerning USDT. Like, they are, you know, free to blacklist anyone that they want.
Yeah, yeah.
And for example, they blacklist you for, and you don't know why. And is there like any other company that you know, or any judge or government or anyone that you can complain to? Hey, yeah, listen, I got my money so. Seized effectively, and what to do about it?
Yeah, probably not possible. I wouldn't know what to do in such a situation, because even if I did have a chance to go through to like a judge or like Tether or something, my request would probably not even be seen. It's just a random person just requesting for an unseizure of their wallet, you know, or the address. So probably wouldn't get anywhere with it, which is pretty bad, especially if it was just done by accident or something. You tend to see this with banks as well, you know, in traditional banking. You have like UK banks, for instance, in my country, where they just flag accounts for no reason. Let's say you deposit, like, withdraw, sorry, 2K from you know, Coinbase or Binance or something into a bank account. You can be flagged very easily, even though if it's all legitimate money, even if the bank condones cryptocurrency trading, you can still get flagged, and then you'll be waiting months to actually resolve that flag, and then you can't actually utilize the bank account. So yeah, I mean, I'll say this kind of same problem exists in traditional banking, which is very problematic.
Yeah, the same goes, you know, with Poland, but here it's like even worse, because you may have your money blocked for basically no reason for years. Mm. And there was the case. There were cases of people that were having blocked like millions in their bank account for years without really, you know, telling them why they, you know, seized their money.
Yeah. On another topic, we have an Oracle employee who helped cocaine dealers hide $54 million in crypto. That is truly one spectacular title. $54 million and helping cocaine dealers. What's also like more interesting about this is that it was for imprisoned cocaine traffickers. I don't really want to say their name. Don't need to really say it. But it was a duo of people, and they was, you know, they were sentenced to 21 and 19 years. But yeah, they operated a pretty big lucrative narcotics business, which was just mainly focused on cocaine. And yeah, it was pretty interesting. But they attempted to just conceal a ton of money in crypto from all the dark web sales that they got on various markets. And they even purchased 30,000 ETH at some point, which is currently valued at over $54 million. Probably outdated now, because the prices keep fluctuating as of recently, but it's around there. Nevertheless, it's still a big number.
Yeah, still, if you know, they were imprisoned, and how did they communicate? I don't know. I guess maybe the prison was using Oracle database. this is such a crazy story.
Yeah, it's certainly weird. But it's really good to show that the extent criminals go to still make things work, right? Even some of the best criminals who get sentenced to, you know, to prison and whatnot, and they get like life, for instance, for all their crimes, sometimes they still work out of prison. Like, nothing really changes because they are just so connected. You know, this is kind of like maybe a common occurrence, I could say, but it only happens with the top criminals.
It's like they should recall the undercover boss in prison for people jailed there. It would be hilarious.
And then we also have Aave V2 and V3, which had a security incident. If you want to go into that, though.
So recently, Aave V2 and V3 had security incident. Unfortunately, we do not know what happened. We only know that the stable rates were paused in case of Aave. Unfortunately, because Aave is heavily forked, the team didn't disclose what happened. I guess that they are, you know, they disclosed it to all the forks of Aave, and they are waiting for them to prepare some measures, and only then they will disclose what really happened. But this was actually high vulnerability, which was reported on Immunify, and later it was upgraded to critical, which is like really good. Like, I don't have words to say, you know, how good job Immunify is really doing for the projects that really want to be secure. And this only shows that, first of all, that they are still white hats and good people in this space. But the Aave V2, I don't know, apart from Uniswap, Compound, and Aave, which other project had more audits. And still, like, I guess that if we take into consideration Aave and all the forks and all the security audits that they have, and no one found a critical. And for years, like, Aave V2 is how much on the market? Like, how long? I guess.
Yeah, quite a while.
More. Like, one of the first projects.
It truly goes to show that, you know, anybody can find anything. Like I said earlier, you know, everybody brings something else to the table. Some things will not see things the same way. as you know, as for instance, like me or you, right? I could see something, you know, completely vulnerable, and you might see it as secure. The same as vice versa, you know. So that's why I always say, you know, nobody is truly like worse than the other auditor. It really depends on the context. But yeah, honestly, again, it is quite crazy to see that RVV2 was around for so long, and then there was a potential critical, well, not even a potential, it was guaranteed critical, that actually affected the pools. So yeah, but no funds were at risk. So again, that's happy, good news. Yeah, and then in other news, again, we have Taiwan Police, which bust 324.2 million USDT in a money laundering operation. So yeah, this is another money laundering operation. It was quite interesting, to say the least. It was actually located in Taichung, hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly, and it was relating to a specific suspect that I'm not going to reveal, just as I didn't with the other two in the previous cocaine one. But they were just laundering funds related to an investment fraud scheme, which was, you know, uncovered in October 2022. And this was recent, you know, this again happened last month. So this is why we are reporting it. It's still fairly recent. And three other suspects were also caught. But 324.2 million, that's a lot of money to be laundering as well. That's quite a lot.
Yeah, like, how do you even launder this amount of money?
Yeah, I mean, granted, like, they were quite, I guess they made it to 324 million somehow. So, you know, they were maybe smart in some aspects, but the overall laundering scheme was kind of weak, because from what I can see, they were laundering money through dummy accounts. And realistically, you just need a simple tool to be able to find the connections between dummy accounts. That's like the most basic level of money laundering that can occur from a person who has no technical background. Because even though people who are slightly technical, they go straight to Tornado, right? Again, as unfortunate it is, because it just harms Tornado's reputation. But it is true. All people utilize like some private, you know, service on a Black Hat forum. But laundering it just to dummy accounts, which can, you know, be very easily connected by, for instance, like an individual like Zach, XBT. I mean, yeah, you're not really going to get away with that at all, never. So yeah, it was very, very interesting to see this. But I'm not surprised that they were caught, honestly. It was a very basic money laundering scheme, and it just didn't work out.
Yeah, so all the bad guys out there, watch out for yourself.
Yeah.
If you are trying to, yeah, do something illegal, do it good.
Yeah, exactly. Not that we're actually supporting that, but, you know.
I wonder if there is any kind of academy for bad guys. As in Despicable Me.
What's even crazier, actually, about this this money laundering scheme is that the whole mastermind person, he actually had a Lamborghini, another car, and then also three high-end watches. So I'm probably suspecting Rolex. That really tends to be the trend with when people correlate high-end watches to that sort of brand. And then just normal work phones and drugs. So I don't know why you would be, you know, leaving evidence like that lying around. Lamborghini and another car and three high-end watches, cool, you know, that makes sense. You could just pass it off as investments. But actual work phones and drugs, I mean, that's really just giving all the evidence, you know, on the plate to the police. So yeah, I mean, at least it's good that they got caught, making the space safer either way. And yeah, that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, and finally, the last topic for today, fake ledger live app in Microsoft Store steals $768,000 in crypto. Ay. This is, yeah. Oh yeah, like, people are constantly falling victims to some apps, be it like in Microsoft Store, Google Store, or Apple Store. But because it is like so simple to do it, like, I don't know why are like the companies like Microsoft, they are not like checking for this stuff. Like, just comparing the image of the official Ledger app and this one, you know, by the Microsoft Store, which they can do all, of course, right? And, you know, just using AI to detect such cases and not allowing such app to be deployed on their store is just, I think it would take like a month for Microsoft to do. And I've heard so much of those stories, you know, over the years, and nothing changes.
I agree. And what's even worse about this is actually Google Play Store, for instance, they have a very high rate of scams. I don't know what goes on behind the scenes with their framework on how they approve the applications that go onto the store, but a lot of them are scams. I'm very unfamiliar with the Microsoft Store. I've never downloaded anything from there. I don't think not even one app, but Google Store, I have downloaded like a few things from there, you know, in my life. And I did see a lot of scams. But Apple definitely takes the crown. They are probably the most secure in the store whole like niche. Their security is actually top notch, but Microsoft and Google, I don't know what they're playing at, honestly. Very big companies, very big. And security as well. It's like, do you even care about the security at this point? Like, it doesn't really look too good. Yeah, but it's quite crazy. That like a Ledger Live app, Web3, got approved by that name, and just had no like verification behind it. And 768K as well. What's even worse about this is that it was vulnerable people that got really took advantage of. People who probably, you know, don't have a lot of money. And yeah, but you know, at the same time, scammers are heartless. So it's not like they care who actually lost money. They got it and they're happy at the end of the day.
Yeah, and the worst part, you know, connecting to what we just spoke about is like, first of all, they use the copied description from the legitimate app on the Apple Store. And they had like only one 5-star rating.
Oh, okay.
And wow. Developer name was Official Dev. I'm citing a quote unquote Official Dev.
Oh my god, very very bait name.
Yeah, and I the Microsoft Store should definitely do anything about that.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, but again, we had our hero Zach XBT that raised the alarm on November 5th, revealing that the app has actually stolen almost $600,000 from users who installed it up to date, and like later it was increased by another like around $200,000. Like, good for this, like that at least like the Microsoft swiftly reacted, and you know, after raising this alarm, they will just remove the app the same day. But like, in my opinion, it should not really land there in the first place.
I agree. I definitely agree. Time obviously is a very important factor in things like this, situations like this, sorry. And, you know, like you're saying, it shouldn't have been on there in the first place, but it's still good that, you know, time was a very big factor in this and they could have deleted it very quickly. But at the end of the day, it was still 768K that was just gone in that entire time frame. So, you know, Microsoft should have done better, to be honest, way better.
The thing also here is that when we hear about the losses, we are, you know, just seeing the numbers, but we are not seeing the people behind that. And in this case, the victims reported significant losses. Some of them were sharing on Reddit that they lose basically all their life savings. Yeah, this is the thing that no one talks about, but I think that recently Peter Karczewski was talking about it in one of the interviews with him, that, you know, you have to imagine like all the families losing money, you know, the fathers not having money for their kids. And we should really not treat this everything, all these hacks as a numbers, but as a people losing money.
Yeah, I agree. Can't just be some statistic.
Yep.
Yeah, certainly agree. Well, I think this is the end of it though.
Yep, it was quite all right, but...
No, but honestly, we covered a lot of things. It was very nice covering all this information. We're going to be doing this on a monthly basis. Even with maybe some important events, you know, where we'll hold some live talks or whatever. We'll see where this goes. But guys, if you did enjoy this podcast, be sure to leave a like and also comment just to let us know how we did, and just so that we know whether to continue this this podcast or not. Yeah, again, I hope you enjoyed everything that we've spoken about. Hope you enjoyed our views as well and our overall coverage.
Yep, so that's all for today. Thanks a lot and see you in the next one.